from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show. 92.9 FM. ESPN.
And rolling Tuesday, August 13th, 2024 is the date. It is time, and welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show. I'm your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer, as always, of the show. That would be Connor Dunning on X at CDunning929. Connor, what's the word, brother? How are you?
What's up, man?
You doing okay?
I'm doing okay.
Doing okay. Glad to hear. Now, we have 3 hours of talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. We have the NBA schedule getting released bit by bit. We have the Grizzlies in-season tournament schedule in the worst death group imaginable. You have the Pelicans, the Mavs, the Nuggets, and the Warriors. Not great. After team went 0-4 in the in-season cup, we have all of the dates and the times and everything else. And I hope it's not another 0-4. I don't imagine it will be. But it's going to be hard to get out of the group stage if you're the Grizzlies. 2-2 seems fair. 3-1 would be a plus. There's no doubt about it. Now, also on top of that, we just have NBA notes on the schedule. The rest of it will be released on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. And I know what I can't wait for. Know what my favorite thing every single year is when it comes to the schedule release? Fish notes.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to have Rob Fisher on this week.
Have to.
To talk about the schedule when it ultimately gets released, probably either Thursday or Friday. But I'll have to reach out to him. So we'll talk about that. We have some NFL news and notes in general. J.J. McCarthy, first-round pick, quarterback for the Vikings, has a meniscus injury, torn meniscus, that they're going to have to deal with. And I want to take you through their offseason. It has been painful. And, like, extremely painful for those that have not been paying attention. You have a cornerback who passed away, an NFL draft pick, first rounder, pass away in a car accident. You have another corner with an ACL injury. You have Jordan Addison with a DUI, their starting wide receiver. And now you have J.J. McCarthy likely out for the start of the season, and we'll see what that, you know, surgery goes like. But it has been painful.
Brutal.
For the Minnesota Vikings. But we also have some injury notes to talk about. As far as guests are concerned, 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins will join from the Jeff Calkins Show and the Daily Memphian. He's a columnist there. And then 6 o'clock, as is customary every single Tuesday, Christian Fowler will join the show from Bluff City Media. He's a senior writer and content creator for them. And we have a podcast called the On the Bluff Podcast, releases every single Tuesday at noon. We cover Tigers, everything under the sun, you know, talk some NFL as well. But you can find that podcast on Apple, Spotify, full-length video version on YouTube. We'll hop into the Blitz around 6:30, and we have to talk about the Grizzlies and that in-season tournament. group play draw, and then the NFL team valuations came back today, Connor, from Sportico. They were published. And amid the ongoing back and forth between the Cowboys and C.D. Lamb, did you get a look, a load of what the Cowboys are valued at this season? It's history. It's groundbreaking. $10 billion, over $10 billion, $10.32 billion franchise in the Dallas Cowboys. Richest in sport.
Pay them.
The only sports franchise to ever reach the mark of $10
billion. Crazy.
Coming in second, I think, was the Rams, and they're somewhere around $7.5 billion. I am just
the Rams?
Floored.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. I did not expect that.
I'm absolutely floored by the Cowboys being over $10 billion when second place is right around $7.5. It's absolutely nuts. Absolutely nuts. Now, before I get into anything, I tried to go in, and I did this with complete open and honesty. Everybody knows, just based on talking about it, and I don't really get into politics all that often. Everybody knows I'm not the biggest Donald Trump fan, or really the biggest Elon Musk fan. But you know what? I tried last night to tune in to the Elon Musk, Donald Trump live spaces, whatever the hell you want to call it, on X last night. But good God, man, that was bad. That was not fun to listen to. 40 minutes late, by the way. They had technical difficulties because there's a million people tuning in. So they were 40 minutes late. And then it was 3 hours long, Connor. 3 hours freaking. Dude, I don't want to hear Elon Musk ask questions for 3 hours. He was stumbling over his words. He didn't know what to ask in that three-hour period. And then it made me laugh. He went on X last night and he said, "Does anyone have a less than one-hour edit of highlights from the real Donald Trump conversation?" And he put a question mark after that. That's what most people be looking for. Buddy, you own X. Do you not have someone on the company dime that was getting that ready for you? Come on, brother. My gosh. Two guys who have, I wouldn't say failing, but not very good social platforms talking with each other last night. Is that fair? Is that fair to say, Connor?
Yeah, I'm glad I took a pass on that one. It was something that I heard about, and I was like, nah, I'm good. Yeah. There's nothing there for me.
Yeah.
Nothing there for me.
Yeah, pretty brutal. Pretty brutal. Now, let's hop into the NBA schedule. At least we have some notable games that are going to be worth talking about. Opening night of the 2024-25 NBA season will be on TNT October 22nd. This was released by Shams yesterday. We're going to have the Knicks at Celtics for ring night. I can't wait to see that. The Knicks have taken a lot of steps to try to compete with the Celtics. Can they do that night one when the Celtics are getting their rings? We shall see. Then you'll have the Timberwolves at Lakers for the late slate. That is a really good opening night. I have no notes. No real notes about that. You have an up-and-coming team in the Timberwolves against the Lakers. You have an up-and-coming team in the East in the Knicks trying to go get over top of the Celtics. They made a bunch of moves going to get Mikal Bridges. Jalen Brunson taking a pay cut so they could get over the Celtics. We'll see a lot, I think, opening night, although it's an 82-game season. Then we're going to have Mavs at Warriors on November 12th. That's what I'm very curious about. And why is that notable? It's going to be the return of Klay Thompson to the Bay Area. I would imagine he gets a standing O and he has a video collage, the whole thing. I'd imagine it's all up there. But I do want to see Klay and how he acts when he goes back to the Bay Area. He was very annoyed with him by the end of the whole thing. He wanted to get up out of there. I mean, when you look at what he ended up taking from the Mavs, 3 years, $50 million, he could have gotten a whole lot more money elsewhere. But he wanted to get the hell out of Dodge. He wanted to get the hell out of the Bay Area and go to the Mavericks so he could compete for a championship. He has a better chance with the Mavs, I think, than the Warriors, no doubt about that. But I want to see how he responds to that home crowd that was so good to him over the years. That's going to be something to watch. And then also, we do have a couple more opening night games that will be on October 23rd when the rest of the NBA is playing. Obviously, October 22nd, we're just having the two games. But opening night, we'll also have Suns at Clippers on October 23rd. The Clippers will open up their new arena, which I'm curious to see Steve Ballmer on hand. He'll be going absolutely nuts. He'll be grabbing knees and, screaming at the top of his lungs. And then we'll have Bucks at Sixers. So I think we're going to have a really good early slate going into the season. And with that, I want to get to the Grizzlies. Their early slate could be really, really brutal. And the reason I say that is because in division, you look at their divisional matchups this year, it is not going to be easy. The Mavericks are one of the best teams in the West with what they did this offseason. Pelicans got better with DeJounte Murray. You have the Rockets, who are still going to be sort of at the peak of their game, and you're going to have the Steven Adams sort of return trip back and forth. You get to go play against him, and he'll be sort of the reserve big behind Alperen Şengün. So that team's going to be solid, and they were just outside of the play-in last year with 41 wins. And then the Spurs are not going to be a given anymore. They're not going to be a given. And when we'll talk about the NBA Cup and the in-season tournament, but when you talk about the Warriors, the Nuggets, the Pelicans, and I'm forgetting one, and the Mavericks all being in that in-season tournament against the Grizzlies, this early season slate is going to be one where the Grizzlies are coming off injury. They have to be able to manage the early season, or it could get ugly relatively early. I have a lot of confidence and hope. I'm quietly confident about what they can accomplish even against the best teams on their schedule. But this schedule in the early going is going to be very, very hard. And I think that the West will eat itself. I think there'll be a lot of cannibalism in the Western Conference early in the season.
Yeah, that's why you just hope that those division games are spread out a little bit. You know, I think it was 9 or 10 of them happened before Christmas Day last year. So you just hope that it gets spread out a little bit so that the Grizzlies have a bit of a breathing room. But, you know, like we've talked about, we expect the Grizzlies to bounce back and be one of the more talented teams in the Western Conference. So even though the schedule may be difficult, they should be able to win a majority of those games. And that's why you just hope that they hit the ground running so that we can avoid some pitfalls of early season narratives that might happen.
Now, one thing I'm really hopeful of with the Western Conference is that you don't end up in a situation like last year where you have to get to 46 wins to even be in the play-in, right? And if you want to be in those top six seeds, you're going to have to get to 49 or 50 wins. I hope you don't quite have that, because I wonder what the Grizzlies can accomplish there. But I am of the opinion we're not going to have as competitive, as high win totals in the Western Conference heading into this season. I think there's a lot more competition back and forth, and losses will be handed out that way. But 50 wins to get into the top six seeds, that is tough. And I really hope that's not how this Western Conference season sort of shakes out.
It's one of the few off seasons that have happened in a while where I think that you can kind of definitively say that the Eastern Conference probably got better than the West did. I'm not saying that the East is better than the West by any means. They made up some ground. Usually you just see the better players staying in the Western Conference or moving to the Western Conference, but the player movement happened more in the East, and the top teams in the Eastern Conference, to be quite honest, got better, where when you look at the Western Conference, a few teams got worse, a few teams got better, and then you kind of have the Grizzlies where it's just they're getting better because they're going to have their guys back healthy, but there wasn't any major change necessarily with the team's roster. But then when you look at, like, the Nuggets, I think that we can all agree that the Nuggets are certainly worse than they were at the beginning of last season. They're definitely worse than they were beginning of 2 years ago. So it's going to be interesting to see what the Western Conference looks like. I agree with you. It will be a bit cannibalistic, and I don't know if it's going to take, you know, 46 wins to actually make it to the 10 seed. I hope not, because that means it's going to be a very difficult Western Conference, but we shall see.
And this is something I've been trying to chew on as we get closer to the season, into training camp, the teams are going to get together, start playing together. What are the bad matchups in the Western Conference for the Grizzlies? Obviously, you look at the Oklahoma City Thunder, but they're a bad matchup for everybody. But what are the bad matchups, the matchups you are afraid of in the Western Conference for the Memphis Grizzlies heading into this season? I don't know if there are that many that really jump out at me. I think they can handle themselves against the Mavs as long as Vince Williams Jr., G.G. Jackson can show up and be what we expect them to be. Now, we have to see that on the floor because they're, you know, going to be going into their second year in NBA play, and, you know, a lot of things can happen. And, you know, we could be having the conversation. I hope we don't have this conversation, that the back half of last year was a little bit of fool's gold with both of those guys. Again, don't expect to have that conversation, but if those guys step up, I feel confident about the depth, the defense, and the offensive creation that this team has. So what are the bad matchups in the Western Conference for the Grizzlies?
Bad matchups?
What are the matchups that really freak you out?
Difficult matchups.
The Thunder,
probably,
for sure.
It's the Thunder, the Timberwolves, the Mavericks. I mean, that's probably the only, like, tough matchups.
Do the Mavericks, but
Denver,
are the Mavericks like? Are you losing your mind over that type of matchup? Are you counting yourself out of a matchup against the Mavericks?
No. I'm
say
not
it's
saying
it's a seven game series against the Mavericks. Are you really counting yourself out of that type of matchup?
No, that's not what I said.
That's not
what you asked.
I know. I understand that.
It's not what you asked. Nor is it what I said. That. No, it's just that you asked me where the toughest matchups are going to be. It'll be those three teams. It'll be the Timberwolves, it'll be the Thunder, and it'll be the Mavericks. It's teams that have high-level guards but also have big guys that can make plays. Those are going to be the more difficult matchups for anybody in the West. That being said, the Grizzlies have the personnel to match it. It's just going to be – a lot of it comes down to what does Zach Edey look like.
There's two teams that I would count out the Grizzlies in a seven-game series against. There's two teams. That's the Thunder and the Timberwolves. And I know that some people are going to take me, you know, and be angry with me for saying the Timberwolves because, you know, that was a team you beat 2 years ago with that set of circumstances and everything else. You got to the second round against the Warriors, ultimately flopped out of the playoffs. But those bigs, only having Zach Edey and Jaren Jackson Jr. and Santi Aldama and Brandon Clark on the other side, those bigs scare the hell out of me. When you have Naz Reid, Karl Anthony Towns, and Rudy Gobert dealing with only one true five in Zach Edey, that is terrifying to me. That is a matchup I do not want to see too often throughout the regular season.
I'm going to be really curious to see what the Timberwolves look like with expectation now put upon their shoulders. Because, you expect Anthony Edwards to show up. And Karl Anthony Towns, he looked better last season, but to be quite honest, in the bigger moments, he was not playing very well. And then can Gobert replicate a really good season that he had? They are, though, another year older. And one of the misnomers about the Minnesota Timberwolves has been, well, it's this young team. They're not a young basketball team. They straight up aren't a young team. Like, Anthony Edwards is very young, and they have some young pieces, but the majority of their team are older players in the NBA. They've been in the NBA for a while, so... You know, it's just going to be interesting to see if they can continue that momentum. The team that I 100% know is going to show up next year and be a problem is the Oklahoma City Thunder. That is going to be the team from the West that is going to show up and be a problem every single night. They are a true young team in the NBA with a lot of talent, and they have a lot of chemistry. They have a lot of continuity. They are going to be the team, in my opinion, that you are probably going to have to get past in the West if you're trying to make it to the finals.
All right. Now, moving on, I want to get to a little college football news because I've been hearing my nice promo about, you know, the Michigan program flipping the middle finger at the NCAA amid all their investigations, the one for recruiting and COVID, and then obviously the sign stealing investigation. We know Jim Harbaugh got a 4-year show cause, but as of last week, he was supposed to be the honorary captain for game one for Michigan heading back to Ann Arbor for their game against Fresno State. Today, I want to ask you this, Connor. Is this soft or not soft? Is Michigan being soft by backing out of this? They have announced today, and Sharon Moore said that Jim Harbaugh will no longer be the honorary captain for the August 31st game. It says he decided to stay, quote, in the foxhole. That's so Jim Harbaugh. With the Chargers instead of taking a deep, long bow. Is that soft? Not soft? Does it make sense?
I don't know if I would call it soft. I suppose my feeling on it is, if you were Michigan, and in the last few weeks, Jim Harbaugh has kind of just thrown you to the, like, to the NCAA and said, here, like, eat them, and I have nothing to do with this, I'd be a little pissed off. I don't know if it's soft. That's why I don't think that they're doing it to appease the NCAA. Part of me thinks that Harbaugh's recent comments have been, to be quite honest, a bit disrespectful toward Michigan, and he is trying to distance himself from it, so they're saying, okay, then don't come.
You know, what I do, I view this as, okay, guys, we have defied the NCAA this entire time. Let's take a little bit off of our shoulders. That's how I view it.
Is there any penalty, though, for him being there?
No. But this is we have been openly defying them. We still have to get our penalties for the sign stealing case. Connor Stallions is going to speak on Untold here relatively soon. Let's take a little bit of the nastiness out of this entire situation. I'd imagine this came from the top down more so than anything. I know they're saying that Jim Harbaugh wants to stay, quote, in the foxhole with the Chargers, and he doesn't want to leave the Chargers at this moment, but he was planning on doing it last week. Something tells me this is the people at the top, right? They're basically saying, hey, guys, let's calm down the disrespect. toward the NCAA. Let's calm down just a tad bit, acting like the victim throughout this entire process. We probably need to just let this thing pass on our own time and keep Jim Harbaugh away from here for a little bit.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that. I don't think that this decision would have been made if Harbaugh didn't make the comments that he did. I think that, yes, part of it is probably they are saying, listen, we need to let this thing pass, and then we can bring him back and honor him and do all of those things while there isn't negativity in the news. At the same time, though, he did just kind of throw Michigan under the bus, and he is pretending as if he has no responsibility yeah. toward it. And if you are a higher up at the university, like if you are higher up at Michigan, that would probably bother you. And you know, egos are at play here. We know that egos are definitely in play when it comes to college athletics. I think that they got their feelings hurt by John Harbaugh, and they're saying, okay, well, Jim Harbaugh, and they're saying, okay, well, we're going to take away your day. I think it could be a combination of both things.
Yeah, here's where I'm at. I just don't know if this is the time to sort of back out of this.
If there was a penalty for having him there.
Show some relaxation. I don't know. This is the time where if you've been showing strength this whole time, continue to show strength. Keep pushing through.
That's why I think it has something to do with what Harbaugh said.
Yeah, but also Jim Harbaugh being there, I don't think it's going to, like you sort of mentioned, it's not going to bring any extra penalties. I don't think it'll make the NCAA go even harder with the sign-stealing punishment. But I just, if you have been acting this way this entire time, continue acting that way.
I guess so.
That's sort of where I'm at.
I guess part of me, I just don't
that's,
really
That's
view...
the part of it where I view it a little bit soft. You're backing out. And you know, going away from the way you've been acting this entire time.
Is it a hard move, though, to honor a coach that brought you a national championship? I don't know. Like, I guess I'm just like...
Well, given the circumstances, it kind of is.
I just don't view it as disrespect toward the NCAA. I'm just like,
given the circumstances,
Jim Harbaugh. I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Given the circumstances...
I think their ego got hurt by his comments. That's my take.
Given the circumstances, though... This would be a massive middle finger to bring Jim Harbaugh right after getting a 4-year show cause right back to the place where he got the show cause at.
But there's no threat. I just don't know if it can be a middle finger if there's no, like, there is no defiance. They're not trying to bar him from being there. Him being there brings no penalty. It's like, okay. okay.
You don't
have him there.
So let me push back on that. You think it's no defiance at all bringing
really.
Jim Harbaugh back? Immediately after getting a show cause and still in the midst of an investigation and the punishment being handed down for the sign stealing. Because I think that's open defiance.
When there is no penalty for having him there, I do not think that is defiance. I see it. I think that this decision may have been made more so because of the comments he has made, and he is trying to distance himself from Michigan. So I think Michigan said, if you want that distance... We will do that, and an additional bonus of that is, okay, it will also allow us to not, you know, piss off the NCAA, even though I just don't really think it, I don't know. To me, I'm just like, if there's no penalty for having him there, I just don't really view it as soft for backing out when I think it is an ego play. I think that their egos got hurt by his comments. He wants to distance himself, and they are saying, all right, well, let all of this blow over, and then when we bring him back, cooler heads can prevail later on. If there was a penalty for having him there, like, for instance, it's not a one-to-one, but to try to explain what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
James Wiseman playing for the Tigers was an open act of defiance.
Yes.
They said, if you do that, a penalty will come.
Sure.
There is nothing like that here with Jim Harbaugh.
Okay.
There's a big difference for me in those two things, where if having him there was a direct violation of the show cause that they have given and everything, yeah, that's an issue. But it doesn't affect anything. It's just bringing him back to honor him after a national championship
season.
But
it's the image of it is defiance.
Sure.
I get what you're saying. It's not literally, you know, the NCAA saying, don't do that or we're going to come, you know,
right,
we're going to give
right.
you more punishment. But I think by the image of him being there day one after them the NCAA giving him a level one violation, levying a 4-year show cause, I think when you look at the image of that, that is absolutely defiant. By the University of Michigan, if they allowed that to happen.
I guess I just view it as like the kid who thinks he's being defiant, but in reality, it's like, all right, dude, you brought him back. Who really cares? Like, I guess that's kind of how I view it Michigan, they also did this thing like Michigan versus the world. And it's like, not really. It's really not that at all. I don't know. I think that Michigan has a tendency to be a bit dramatic in all of these things, the comments that have been made and him wanting to distance himself and the higher-ups having their feelings hurt. I think all of that has to come into play here. So I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you. I'm just saying I don't think the number one reason that they're doing it is because they are afraid of anything happening because he is there.
Yeah. I just think that there's something to be said about them not wanting to continue to go down this path of looking defiant and pissing them off every step
now,
of the way. When they're in a current investigation.
They might be worried about the Connor Stallions thing.
When you give a coach a 4-year show cause, I think what's pretty clear about that, right, is the NCAA saying, yeah, we don't want to see you in college football. We don't want to see you near college football.
They can't do anything.
We don't want you to be around.
They can't do anything about
it. And then the first thing that Michigan would have done is bring him back around.
I guess so. But they can't do anything. It's like, okay, y'all going to stand outside the fence and yell at us? What are you going to do?
I hear you.
Like, you can't. Okay, yeah.
Well, honestly, I'll say this. The NCAA probably is close to that fence. They're probably pretty close to the big house right now.
Sure.
They're probably in town. Investigating, so they are close.
I guess the crux of my argument is just the NCAA is just not that scary, so
yeah.
I can't really defy something I'm not afraid of.
That's something I can absolutely get on board with. The NCAA in this day and age is really not that scary. Now, speaking of Michigan, they had a quarterback last year by the name of J.J. McCarthy, national champion quarterback, and he had a really good, I got to be honest, I thought he played really well in his first preseason game. 11 for 17, right around 180 yards. Delivered the ball when he needed to, although he is throwing the ball a whole lot more in the Kevin O'Connell offense than he ever really did at Michigan. He's going to be asked to do that consistently. But today, after over the weekend complaining about knee soreness, it looks like he's going to have to undergo knee surgery for a torn meniscus. And the surgery he's going to get, I've seen this plenty of times. You can either clean it out or you can just sort of cut it off, get him on the field relatively soon. So the surgery that he gets is going to determine how much time he will be sidelined. So for me, looking at what the situation is for the Vikings, I don't think you need to rush through any type of rehab. If this is going to be your quarterback of the future, make sure you get the full meniscus surgery, handle it, rehab it, and let Sam Darnold start week one and through most of the regular season. There's no reason to rush J.J. McCarthy out there. You don't have a team right now that is capable of making any waves in the playoffs. Let J.J. McCarthy get fully healthy before you put him back into action. I think that is the easiest, most obvious answer to this entire thing.
No, 100% agree. I did see some funny jokes about this. It is sad that he got injured after having such a great preseason showing, considering how many haters he has. To be quite honest, I might be in that group of people. But I did see somebody say that was like his knees didn't know how to handle that many dropbacks. And it's like, oh, pretty good. Not bad. Now, Sam Darnold, 20-1 comeback player of the year odds right now.
Oh, do I really want to fall? Do we want to fall into something like that, Connor? Do we want to fall for that?
No, but
no,
it's there.
It's there. I mean, who else would be up for comeback player of the year?
I have no idea.
Do we have any?
I can't. I need to find a complete list.
Sam Darnold, I've talked about in the past. He is a guy who's just gotten opportunity.
Rodgers is probably
opportunity. Yeah, Aaron Rodgers probably the overwhelming favorite now that I'm thinking about it. But Sam Darnold's gotten opportunity after opportunity, and he's never done anything with that opportunity. He's had a couple of good games here and there. He started off hot with the Panthers a couple of years ago, but we saw where that went. I can't do it. 20-1, that's decent value, I guess.
It's not bad value.
But I can't hop into the Sam Darnold train anymore.
Okay, I have been a few.
Because to be honest, I've been a Sam Darnold fan for a while. I think he's got all the tools, and he has the capability of being a good quarterback in the National Football League, but he's never been able to put it all together for an entire season.
All right, it looks like Aaron Rodgers.
Overwhelming.
He's the overwhelming favorite right now. Then you have Russell Wilson, Deshaun Watson, Sam Darnold comes in fourth, Justin Fields comes in fifth, and then Gardner Minshew? Should he be on that list? And then I've also seen the name Anthony Richardson get floated around.
Well, Gardner Minshew with the Raiders, starting quarterback.
Is that a comeback player of the year, though?
I mean, I don't know. And here's the other thing. Deshaun Watson in third, I think you can throw that out. Here's the thing.
I don't know. I don't think people are going to vote for him.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
He could have an unbelievable year. He could finally play the requisite amount of games to get the stats he got with the Texans when he was playing with them. Right, he could finally break through this year. I don't get the sense that any voters are going to give him any and do him any favors.
Oh,
and the comeback player of the year voting. I know he's had some injuries the last 2 years, but I just don't see that happening. Deshaun Watson, I think you'd be wasting money throwing it on.
And then,
even though I think he may probably, from a statistical standpoint, put himself in that category.
I found a better list. This is a FanDuel odd list. Aaron Rodgers and Joe Burrow are tied for first. Then you have Kirk Cousins, Anthony Richardson, Nick Chubb. Is he expected to play this season?
Yeah.
100%. Really? Oh, my God.
No, what's crazy about that injury, I think he just had an ACL tear, even though his leg bent backwards.
It's one of the worst injuries I've ever seen, and I can't believe it wasn't worse.
I'm amazed that it was just sort of the structural damage of an ACL.
And God.
It looked like he dislocated everything and broke everything in his leg.
I'm getting queasy just thinking about it.
Nick Chubb could be definitely at the top of that list because he's probably still going to run the hell out of the ball. We're talking about the Cleveland Browns, that offensive line.
It feels like, though,
Kevin Stefanski,
it is one of the three quarterbacks to lose, Burrow, Rodgers, or Cousins.
Yeah. Yeah, and I'd imagine Cousins will definitely pop up pretty.
Well, they're all expected to have relatively good seasons, you know.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, Cousins lost Rondale Moore though, so that's another.
That's tough.
That's a little bit of a blow.
Did we ever find out what type of injury he had?
They put an air cast. I don't know. This has been new. They're putting air casts on guys who just have like ACL, LCL, like the ligaments torn. Which in the past I didn't really think that that's what they did with that. I thought they usually just sort of took you off the field, put you on a cart, took you on your merry way. Usually with the air cast, it's like compound fracture. They put the air cast on there to keep everything structural.
They were like, we're good. Usually that means
it must have looked
really bad.
It must have looked really bad.
It may have looked like a chub, but ended up not being. Phrasing. Yes. Oh, phrasing there.
Yes. Yeah.
I hear you. Okay.
But it may have been something like that. But from what I understand, it's a ACL injury. LCL. I think he did just about every ligament in his knee. That's brutal. That's absolutely brutal. Now let's go ahead and grab a break. And on the other side, it is tournament week here in Memphis. And I need to get you the storylines for what we're going to see at TPC Southwind starting on Thursday. Let's go ahead and grab a break right here on 92.9 FM ESPN. Starting with the FedEx St. Jude Championship. Marquee Group's coming up on Thursday, 10:45 a.m. You'll have Rory McIlroy and Colin Morikawa teeing off. That's pretty phenomenal. That'll be one we're watching consistently. 10:05, you're going to have Justin Thomas and Brian Harman. 10:35, Wyndham Clark, Ludwig Oberg. So that'll be nice. And then on Friday, I think this is the group. Top two guys in the FedEx standings right now. You have Scottie Scheffler and Xander Schauffele at 10:35 a.m. I think when we're talking about winners of the FedEx Cup, that's what you need to pay attention to. Those two guys in particular. We have Scottie Scheffler, who has been absolutely phenomenal, ridiculous, top 10 finisher, it feels like, about every single week. He's got the Masters. He's got the gold medal. He's been unbelievable. But also, Xander Schauffele. We're talking about two majors that he's won this year. So that's going to be the one we watch. Also, on Friday, we're going to have Sahith Tagala and Hideki Matsuyama at 10:25 a.m., Jordan Spieth and Mark Hubbard at 10:55 a.m. Now, what are we watching? I think, first of all, the first question everybody's going to have is, can anyone catch Scotty? Can anyone catch Scottie Scheffler at the top of these standings? I think the long and short of it, Connor, is absolutely not. No. He's got 5,993 FedEx Cup points. Second would be Xander Schauffele with 4,057. It just seems almost impossible to be able to catch up to him. Now, the one thing that you could pay attention to is if a guy like Xander Schauffele gets a couple of top five finishes and you have Scottie Scheffler below him being outside of the top 10 for one of those tournaments, maybe he could catch him. Or if you had somebody under him or Xander Schauffele win both the BMW Championship and FedEx St. Jude Championship, then you could have someone catch him. But the likelihood of that happening seems zero to none. Now, what I think is a little bit more close, although not that close, we're going to be looking at PGA Tour Player of the Year here relatively soon. I think Scotty has it in the bag right now. But Xander Schauffele does have two major championships under his belt. If he can come out and win two tournaments in a row in the FedEx playoffs, it could get closer. But even with that, Connor, even if he won two tournaments in a row, if he won the FedEx St. Jude Championship and won the BMW Championship, and again, likelihood of that happening almost zero to none, I still think I'd lean Scotty, right? Like, I don't think there's any way you can lean away from Scotty with everything he's been able to do this season. The guy is untouchable. The guy is ridiculous. And we could be looking at him by the time we get to the end. He could have a 10-stroke lead by the time we get to the final tournament of the year when we talk about the FedEx Cup standing. So, again, for both of those questions, I think it's going to be nearly impossible for anyone to catch Scotty, whether it's PGA Tour Player of the Year or the FedEx Cup standings.
Yeah, and when you look at the betting odds, it's very similar to everything that you're saying. Scotty Scheffler, he's plus 330. Xander Schauffele is plus 700. Then you have Rory and Colin Morikawa up next at plus 800 and plus 1200, respectively. Do you have any, like, best value type of guys? Like, I think the two that everyone keeps saying is Tommy Fleetwood, because he usually plays well at the tournament. He's plus 2,200 right now.
That would be me right there.
Yeah, and then Hideki Matsuyama is at plus 2,500. I think both of those would be pretty good money, good value to get, because, you know, they're always kind of in the mix with this tournament, and they have been the last few times. So it's going to be a really fun tournament. This lineup is pretty amazing.
Oh, it always is. It's because you have people competing for a whole lot of money right now. And what's also fun about it is you have the top 125 for the FedEx St. Jude Championship. You cut that down to the top 50 to go to the BMW Championship. There's a guy by the name of Victor Hovland who won the FedEx Cup last year, who is at serious risk of not being able to even get to the BMW Championship. He's at number 57 currently right now in the FedEx Cup standings, which means as of right now, he would not move on to the second round of the playoffs, the BMW Championship. And that's very unusual for a past champion. So he's going to have to do a whole lot. He's going to have to probably get a top 10 finish to get himself over the top into that top 50 and move on to the BMW Championship. But there's some other guys on the outside looking in that are definitely going to put themselves into some sort of scary territory. Justin Rose is 55th, Jordan Spieth 63rd, Nick Dunlap 67th. And then there's a couple of guys that could play themselves out with a really bad couple of rounds. Adam Scott, Will Zalatoris. Adam Scott at 46, Will Zalatoris at 49th. There's going to be a nice little race. Nice little race, and there's going to be a lot of implications by the time we get to Sunday.
Yeah, when you look at Hovland, it looks like he's plus 3,500. So he's not very good. I wouldn't put money on that one. I'm just going to put that out there. I think I'm not sure he's going to be a repeat champion, but yeah, some of the best golf is when there are real odds at stake here. So you know that everybody's going to try to bring their A game. It's going to be a great weekend. It's always one of the best weekends in the city of Memphis. Have we checked the weather yet? How does the weather look for the weekend? Is it hot? I know it's going to be hot.
I mean,
is it raining, though, as it usually does?
I don't think we're dealing with any rain until maybe Saturday.
Okay.
And I think we're looking at a 30% chance. 30% chance coming up on Saturday.
Okay, it looks
pretty damn clear.
Hot as hell.
It's going to be hot as hell.
97 on Thursday, 98 on Friday. Then it drops down to 90 on Saturday.
I think they're going
to
have
89 Sunday, not bad.
I think when you get to Saturday, Sunday, they'll have a reprieve, but you need a little bit of a reprieve with how much golf is going to be played on Thursday and Friday.
That 97-98 really, like,
that's brutal.
Feels like 100-104.
Especially out there, man. Oh my gosh. Walking the grounds every year when it's that hot. Oh, God. Can't imagine playing golf at the same time. Now, the other thing to watch, Colin Morikawa and Ludvig Åberg, they're in the top 10 in FedEx Cup standings, but they don't have a win this entire season. I know that sounds surprising to people that watch golf consistently, but they don't have a win. What's strange about it, though, they're also, on top of being in the top 10 in points in the FedEx Cup standings, they're top 10 in strokes gained this season. Colin Morikawa with 1.92, he has no wins. And then Ludvig Åberg, 1.83 with no wins. They are the only two players that are in the top 10 of strokes gained this season that have not gotten a win. And Colin Morikawa, I feel like it's been for damn ever since the guy's been able to get over top and go win. Ludvig Åberg, at least relatively new on the scene, starting this year, you know, we can expect maybe not get a win his first year on the tour when we're really following him very closely. But Colin Morikawa, this is one of the best in the game. I've been sort of floored that he's not been able to get over top.
Yeah, like you said, it's his best season of his career in terms of strokes gained perspective, and he's
from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition. You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Finished in the top 20 three times in four trips coming to Memphis, so he'll be in the mix. He'll absolutely be in the mix.
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so. Now, we have a couple of worthy mentions when we get to Memphis Athletics. One, new softball coach. I don't know much about the new softball coach, but I can say but it looks like a pretty decent hire for the most part. It looks like Prater is the new head softball coach at the University of Memphis. This is first. What makes this worth mentioning, in my opinion, Ed Scott, new athletic director over at the University of Memphis, has some things on his plate in the first year that he had to get done, in the first few months as well. One was to secure some funding for the stadium renovations. Also, he had to look over phase two of stadium renovations. And then third on that list was also always going to be find a new softball coach at the University of Memphis. He hires Trina Prater, who comes to Memphis after leading Campbell University 79-39-1 record over the past two seasons. And I believe last season, 37-21-1, 22-5 in conference. So that seems like a pretty damn good hire to start for Ed Scott. Again, I'm not acting like softball is going to get you all the way over top in any type of, you know, conference realignment discussion. But when you're talking about a full athletic department being on the same page, finding good leadership, I think this is a good check mark and a good step in the right direction.
Yeah, sounds like a great hire based on everything that you just said, and I absolutely wish,
how about this?
Wish her the best. I mean, that
2023
been struggling.
2023, 42-18, 15-5 in the Big South, and they ended up getting into the NCAA regional. So that's pretty good at Campbell. So hopefully she can bring some of that over to the University of Memphis. And then for the women's basketball program, I know we don't put a lot of shine on women's sports here at the University of Memphis, but there was a massive commit that was made on the women's basketball side. 5'7 guard DeeDee Hageman from Michigan State committed to the University of Memphis. She was second team All Big Ten last year.
Hell yeah. That's
so
awesome.
In 2023, 51% from the field, 41% from three, 12 points per game. That's a massive pickup. That's something we're not used to. And I wonder, because we know that the NIL money from FedEx, mostly earmarked for football, but some of that can be used elsewhere. You sort of wonder if they got into those sort of conversations here with DeeDee Hageman. It kind of makes sense. It would definitely fit. Somebody like that transferring to the University of Memphis for the women's basketball program never happens.
That's excellent.
Does not happen.
That's excellent. Then we have some more Memphis women's news to get into. The women's soccer team, they're number 10th in the preseason poll, but they've also been chosen to win.
Number one in the AAC.
To win the AAC.
That's obvious, right?
It is obvious.
Yes. There's 11 first place votes. They got 9 of them.
Pretty good.
They kick ass. They've kicked ass
for a while.
Brooks Monaghan, their coach, do you call him manager? Do you call him manager in soccer? Or do you call it coach? I think you call it coach in college in general. But they've been probably, listen, I know people will view this in a weird light because we don't pay attention all the time to Memphis women's soccer, but they're very consistent and very good. They got screwed on their seeding last year. I remember that once they got in the NCAA tournament. But pound for pound, probably the best program on campus, right? Like, is there much of a debate there? Pound for pound. I'm not talking about, like, you know, being in the spotlight, getting on TV constantly, but pound for pound, consistent work, production. that's the best program on campus.
Nothing pops to mind that would dispel that argument.
Because basketball,
no,
you have your ups and downs. Football, you've definitely had your ups and downs under Silverfield.
Football, if they have the season that we believe that
the
they
men's,
will,
men's
it will
soccer did really well last year.
Yeah,
but they also have not been as consistent as that program. That's the best pound for pound program on campus
at this moment. Yes, I would agree.
Close. I don't think it's particularly close.
If Memphis football has the season we think it could have, it'll be in the discussion. But for right now, yeah, it's women's soccer.
Yes. So I was on my podcast last night, and I was doing a little bit of a different sort of exercise. And I was talking about three players on this Memphis football program that can sway them from being, you know, where they're at, where we think they'll be a 10, 11 win team, to getting them over the top into the college football playoff. And, you know, I think that there's some guys that are a given. And those givens that most people would talk about are probably, what, Seth Hennigan, Rock Taylor, you know, Demir Blankensee, Chandler Martin. You like, expect them to be good. They are the pillars of the program. But there's other guys around the edges that certainly can sway this team from being a regular 10-win AAC championship team to a college football playoff from the group of five being the representative team. And I came down to three names. And the third name was Seth Hennigan. And I know that I said he's a given, but Seth Hennigan, isn't it very clear? If you do not have the ability that you had last year to be balanced and for Seth Hennigan to be comfortable within that offense, you're not going to have a good year. I think that much is clear. But then 2-1, I went straight defense, and I want to know your opinion on this. I went Elijah Herring at number two as the pairing alongside Chandler Martin. And then number one, I ended up going Kobe Miner, the cornerback transfer from Indiana. And a lot of people will look at that and be like, well, you could pick anybody from that secondary to step up, and that would be very needed. But when you break down why I put Kobe Miner in that spot, this is a guy who can play man-to-man coverage. You can put him into the boundary. You can be comfortable with putting him into the boundary. I think the last time they had somebody of that ability with that capability at 6'190" was probably Bobby McCain in 2014, the first team that I ever played on. So I think that if you can get somebody who you can trust on an island on third down to play man coverage and stick to a wide receiver on the other side, I think that can sway this team a whole lot more than anything else that we're looking at on this entire team.
I mean, there's no way I can disagree with you. The entire conversation that we have been having this offseason on this station, like the Daily Memphian has it, the Perpetual Appeal has it, if you are talking about the Memphis Tigers and you are talking about the football team, you are talking about the secondary and how it has to be better for them to have the season that they want to have. It is what we hear every single offseason. The defense is better, the defense is better, the defense is better. We have yet to see it. We have yet to see the defense be better. Like you said, they haven't really had a good defense since about 2019, and look what happened. You ended up in the Cotton Bowl, you know what I mean? So, yeah, that's absolutely the correct choice to have. One guy I would mention, I don't know if he is disqualified, though, because he may be too obvious, would be Mario Anderson.
I agree, but that, you know, I put that in sort of the given, that yeah. given category.
I just feel like he's been under-talked about in a way. Like, he's going to be a huge part of that offense. And if he gives you the production that's anything close to what Blake Watson was able to give you, it just elevates the ceiling for that team. And the more points you put up,
here's an interesting point that I think is under-talked about as well. When we talk about the Norvell era, yeah, you talk about the quarterbacks. You talk about Brady White and Riley Ferguson.
Run that football.
Of course. But don't forget where that offense made more explosive plays than anybody in conference, that was in the running game. They had a 2,000-yard rusher and a 1,000-yard rusher in 2018 when Brady White first got here, and he had some struggles that year. Let's not forget, he got booed several times that year. But they had a 2,000-yard rusher and a 1,000-yard rusher. They ultimately willed themselves to the AAC championship against UCF, where they gave up a couple of leads. That was sort of the story of that season. But when this offense was clicking at the best of their abilities, that run game was untouchable. That run game was phenomenal. Even when I was there in 2017, Daryl Henderson running for 1,700 yards, Patrick Taylor running for another 700. You had Tony Pollard running for about 300. You had this stable of backs with all different types of running styles, and you had an O-line that could go execute when they needed to execute. I think this O-line has a lot of bodies, able bodies. The running back room certainly has those able bodies. But let's not forget, I know that we talk about Seth Hennigan in the passing game, and I think we do this too in the SEC with like Tennessee and Ole Miss in particular, right, where we're like, oh, their passing game, that's what they're built off of. Don't forget, the run game sets up everything for those particular teams, and I think that's what we look at here at the University of Memphis. That run game has to be the thing that you hang your hat on before you talk about Seth Hennigan, Rock Taylor, Damir Blank.
Establish the run.
I know how corny it sounds, brother. Run the ball and stop the run. I know how corny it is, but that's the truth of the matter. If you want to be a high-level football team in this day and age, if you want to be a championship-level football team right now, because of the cyclical nature of offense we've seen, you know, since 2019 when we sort of moved into the Georgia era and the Michigan era, play good defense, run the damn football, control the clock a little bit. You have to have all these things in the bag.
I say it all the time, but the reason cliches are cliches is because
they're true.
Because they're true. Run the football, defense wins championships.
It's what
et cetera, this team, et cetera.
But don't you agree? I feel like it gets lost on some folks,
for sure.
The Norvell era and how that actually went. You think back on the quarterbacks and the record-setting performances from Brady White. But I think it gets lost on people sometimes that offense was very much built on the run. I remember a game in 2018 where they lined up in 22 personnel, two tight ends, two running backs, JoJo Dorsius at fullback. The entire second half against the Houston Cougars, they just ran it down their throat. They ran the same play. I can tell you what play. It was G lead, where you pull the guard out, kick out the DN, and you fill up inside. There's a hole that you are creating. Little outside zone, mid zone concept. They ran that the entire second half and ran it up on Houston. They scored 45 points doing that. Having the ability to do that matters. And I agree with you. Mario Anderson Jr., Sutton Smith, Brandon Thomas, whoever you talk about in that running back room, that's going to have to be the capability they have going into this year.
Do you expect them to use them as a platoon?
I expect Mario Anderson Jr. to get a majority of the snaps. Because I think when we talk about Ryan Silverfield and what he has wanted in the past, he finally got last year in Blake Watson.
Mm-hmm.
A guy who can hand the ball off to 15 to 20 times a game and you feel comfortable. But I think a lot of third downs, based on, you know, personnel and what the other team's bringing at you, I think Sutton Smith's going to get a lot of run this year. I would imagine that will be the case. Brandon Thomas, I don't think will be used all that much this year. And I'm sort of hearing some whispers about that. Where he will be used, I think, though, like we saw last year, and sort of that full house set where they have two tight ends and a running back in the backfield, sort of in that goal line situation, because he can put his head down and go get a nasty couple of yards when you need him to. I like the switch up they did on the goal line last year with that full house set. I think that's where Brandon Thomas will be used, but I think the two guys you're looking at the very top, Mario Anderson Jr., Sutton Smith, and there's another guy by the name of Greg DeRosier Jr., who they brought in. He was a transfer. I think he'll be used a little bit, but those two guys at the top have to be a great 1-2 punch. They have to be the thunder and lightning we're expecting if this offense is going to keep on pace with what they did last year under Tim Kramsey. Now let's go ahead and grab a break, and we'll come back and talk with Jeff Calkins to start hour number two right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.